To be successful, an athlete looks for a good coach. So imagine choosing your doctor to be your health coach. What qualities would you be seeking in your health coach? Is it their knowledge, their experience, their past performance? Or are you looking for someone who's able to listen well and learn, to stay up to date, someone who can adapt their strategy to meet your needs, someone with a passion for living well? Stand by, Go Healthy for Good starts right now. And welcome to Go Healthy for Good. Penn Jillette is best known as a magician in the duo Penn and Teller. He had a serious health scare a few years ago. Watch as he shares his story from Withings.
On Halloween of 2014, I found myself in the hospital. I was in the hospital for high blood pressure, which is nutty. High blood pressure, hypertension is a silent problem, but mine got pretty loud. The person I worked with, Ray Cronice, who's a good friend of mine, and also worked with Tim Jennison on Tim's Vermeer, he said he could help me lose a lot of weight. And the first thing he told me, before he talked about what I was going to eat or how much I would exercise, what I was going to do, is he told me to buy a Withings scale. He did not tell me to buy a scale. He told me to buy a Withings scale and told me the model. He sent me a text. Buy this model scale. There was no other choice. So I bought that scale and I brought it back home and I hooked it up. And the next thing he told me was, this, they didn't have this, the Withings scale was right at my local store. The blood pressure cuff I had to send away for, but it was in the same text. I could not consider losing the weight psychologically without a scale to report on my progress. Any scale will report on your progress. The wonderful thing about the Withings scale is it reports to other people on your progress. I work in a magic act, I mentioned that, which means I'm a liar. And I will lie to other people and I will lie to myself. Now, I try to do that professionally, but in my real life, I try to not lie much. But we all know, or most of us know, I don't want to be too solipsistic, but most of us know that we lie. And we lie to ourselves, we lie to others. The wonderful thing about the Withings scale is the instant you step on it, you can't lie. My friends are all tough guys, you know? We don't sit around like high school students and giggle about our weight. When my weight would come in heavy on my phone, I would get a series of mean-spirited, offensive, insulting texts from people that loved me and wanted to save my life. That's really useful. And that you can only get with a scale like Withings, with Withings. Because if you're texting your weight to your friends, you can lie, or you can not bother texting, or you can do something. There's all sorts of ways to let the weasel inside you lie about how fat you are.
Though we'll learn how to kill the weasel today, learn what's not to like about rice. Meet a doctor who's passionate about coaching people to wellness and experience some coaching ourselves from Sean. So let's get on with the news. In the headlines today, lifestyle a major cancer contributor, TV watching predicts blood clots, and less cancer with strength training. Lifestyle factors contribute to more than 40% of all new invasive cancer cases and cancer deaths in adults, according to a new study from the American Cancer Society. Cigarette smoking accounted for the highest proportion, with 20% of new cases and 30% of deaths. Next was excess body weight at around 7% each, and then alcohol at over 5% of new cases and 4% of deaths. Other contributing factors were eating red meat and processed meat, not eating enough fruits and veggies, dietary fiber or dietary calcium, being physically inactive, and excess sun exposure or UV radiation. This study serves to remind us all of the vast potential we each have to prevent cancer in our part of the world by making yet another healthy choice. The risk of blood clots increases with the amount of time spent watching television, even if people get the recommended amount of physical activity. The Atherosclerosis Risk and Community Study followed 15,000 middle-aged people for 20 years. They looked at the incidence of venous blood clots and how it related to TV watching. Because TV watching is a good guide as to whether or not someone is living a sedentary lifestyle. Researchers learned that those watching TV very often were 70% more likely to get a blood clot than those who seldom or never watch TV, even if they exercised regularly. So if you enjoy putting your feet up and watching your favourite show, don't sit through the ads, work them out instead. Exercises that promote muscular strength may be just as important for maintaining health as those that promote cardiovascular fitness. Strength training appears to be associated with reduced risk of cancer deaths and deaths from all causes, according to a recent population study of 80,000 people living in England and Scotland. Individuals who engaged in strength exercises had a 23% lower risk of death by all causes and a 31% lower risk of cancer-related deaths, even after adjusting for age, gender, general health, educational levels, and lifestyle-related behaviours. Those engaged in only aerobic exercise had a 16% lower risk of death by all causes and a 22% lower risk of cardiovascular death. So stay fit, stay strong by getting your 150 minutes of aerobic exercise each week and at least two 20-minute sessions of strength-promoting exercise. I'm Dr. Nerida McKibben, and that's today's news. Today's guest is a health professional with a very unique combination of training and skills. Meet Dr. Brenda Ray. She began her professional career after completing a master's in physical therapy. But sometimes we reach our first goal and find it isn't the end. As a PT, here's what Brenda experienced.
One of the things that was happening with me is I worked in an inpatient neuro rehab situation where I worked with patients who'd had a stroke, a little bit of cardiac or pulmonary disease, and I worked there long enough to see my patients come back with another stroke, another heart attack. And for me, I just knew, I was so passionate about lifestyle medicine, I knew that there was more that could be done. And I felt as a physical therapist a little bit limited in my knowledge and my ability to be able to take it to that next level and offer something different for my patients.
Wow, so what did you do about it?
Well, I'm glad you asked. At Loma Linda, where I was currently working as a PT, I found out that they had a doctorate in public health and preventive care. And so as soon as I learned about it, one weekend I heard about it, and the next day on Monday, the first day I was exploring to see what I could do. And the thing
so
was
you didn't
wonderful.
Settle for a master's, you went straight for a doctorate.
Well, yes. Yeah. So at the time, they didn't have a master's in lifestyle. Now we do. Okay. So I might have chosen that if I'd had that option. But so at the time it was just a doctorate, and so I went for it. And it had nutrition, it had physical activity, and it had health behavior change components to it. And I thought, love it. Want to do it.
Just what you were looking
yeah,
for.
Yeah, so yes. As soon as I could, I started the program.
Wow, and how long did that take?
4 years.
My, and then at the end of 4 years, had you arrived? Did you find that was what you needed to help people make lifestyle
change? I loved the education that I got. And in the process, I was able to complete my registered dietitian requirements too. I had the nutrition and the physical activity components now. I felt much more equipped, and I was able to teach. And so that was wonderful, but I still felt like I was missing the patient care component at that point.
So what did you add at that point?
So at that point, I decided to go back to medical school, and it really was a God decision for me. I really felt that, I had this thing in the back of my head, just kind of like, is that you, God? Are you really calling me to go back to medical school after all of this? And so I promised him, if this is you, I will take the steps. If you open the doors, I'll walk through the doors. And if this is you, then this is all. I'm willing. And so, long story short, I went back to medical school at Loma Linda.
Wow. Yeah. And now, where has that brought you now?
Oh, yeah, wonderful. So I did medical school and residency at Loma Linda, and I've been done now for about 3 years. And so it's just been able to give me an amazing opportunity to work from sort of a population health perspective, but also individually with patients to address lifestyle medicine sort of in a broader scale. And so it's basically given me a platform in which I'm able to share sort of my passion on a different level.
Passion would be essential to do all that education, and we'll see just what she's doing with it later in the show. Now it's time to think about this.
I'm going to go get the mail, babe.
Oh, okay, hon. See you in a minute. What did you use the car for?
I told you I was going to get the mail.
You drove to the mailbox?
Well, yeah, I was tired.
But you walked really far this morning for your exercise. What happened?
Well, I got it all done this morning, so I don't have to do any more exercise today. Isn't that great?
Don't you know it's important to exercise all through the day, not just once?
You mean I have to take several walks through the day?
Well, not long walks, but if you're sitting down all day, you should get up for 2 to 5 minutes every hour and move around, whether it's going to the printer or doing a few squats.
Oh, I don't believe that.
It's true. They found that people who exercise in the morning, go to a sedentary job and sit all day, have a higher death rate than those who move through the day. So get out of that chair and move many times each day. Doctor's orders.
Arsenic is a heavy metal. It's a toxin that occurs naturally in our environment. Historically, however, American cotton farmers made the situation a whole lot worse by dumping 30,000 tons of arsenic-containing pesticides on millions of acres of cotton fields across the South. And then, arsenic-containing antibiotics have been fed to chickens to speed up their growth and turn their flesh a pretty pink. Then we spread chicken manure across our farms. That means further contamination. So it shouldn't surprise us that arsenic shows up in our food chain. Now, in animal meat, it's thought to not be in a form that was harmful, though that's now under question. Whereas in plant foods, it's in its inorganic form, and that's dangerous. And there's one food that we often eat a lot of, and that's rice. Rice sequesters arsenic. It literally pulls it out of the soil. And by the way, that soil was contaminated way before the organic industry started, and so organic rice has the same amount of arsenic as non-organic rice. And that really is a problem. So what are the effects of chronic exposure to arsenic? Well, it's a class 1 carcinogen. That means definitely proven to produce cancer, and it's responsible for many cases of cancer of the bladder, the lung, and skin. But how much risk is it? Well, the FDA has calculated that if someone were to eat half a cup of brown rice every day through their lifetime, their risk of cancer across their lives is 166 times greater than if they didn't eat rice at all. Plus, it increases the risk of heart disease, diabetes, skin disease, hypertension, kidney disease, and strokes. It also suppresses our immune system. Now, with so many choices of rice in the supermarket, you might be asking, is there a particular type that we could choose to reduce our risk? Well, what the FDA measured is that white long grain rice has about 102 parts per billion, medium grain white rice, about 80, short grain white rice, about the same. Now, that may actually be not due to the rice, but because of where it's grown. California is less contaminated than the South, like Arkansas and Texas, where most of the long grain rice is grown. So you might be asking, well, what about wild rice, red rice, black rice? They actually do have less than white rice, again, depending on where they're grown. And brown rice, whether it's long grain, medium grain, or short grain, has about 150 parts per billion, so it's higher even than white rice. But maybe arsenic will stick to the bran on the outside and not be released into our bodies, but just pass right through the gut. When they tested that, they looked at how much goes into the body and then gets excreted through the kidneys, and it was the same whether you ate white rice or brown rice. So that seems to be true. But are there brands or sources of rice that we should be pursuing when we choose which rice to buy in the supermarket? Well, US rice has the highest levels of arsenic in the world for the reasons that I told you about, except for California, which is on par with Asia. And they have about half the levels of arsenic as the other kinds of rice that we get in America. But a word of caution about Asian rice, if it's grown in Sri Lanka, it may have cadmium in it because that's commonly used as a pesticide there. Now, if we're still going to eat rice, you can get rid of 50% of the arsenic if you cook it like pasta. You know, with pasta, we put a lot of water in the pot, we bring it to the boil, we throw in the pasta. Well, you can do the same, but with 6 to 10 times as much water as rice. So if you're going to cook 1 cup of rice, you'd put 10 cups of water or 6 cups of water into that pot, get it boiling, and then throw in your rice. And at the end of cooking, you pour off the water and leave it to sit for about 20 minutes before serving it, and it'll still be fluffy. Now, you will lose some of the nutrients when you do that, but it's probably worth it because the increased risk from cancer probably outweighs the benefit you would have got from that nutrient, if you see what I mean, because your risk of cancer goes down from 166 times to 66 times above normal. Now, rather than eating boiled rice, we need to think about how else we may be consuming rice, because it's hidden in some of these other ingredients or foods on our supermarket shelves. Rice Krispies, or bars like this, contain rice flour, Rice Krispies, different ways that rice sneaks in there, and often they will also contain brown rice syrup. Other baked goods can do that too. Rice milk is also something that we need to bear in mind when we're looking at the different plant milks. Children under the age of 5 should not have rice milk because they are more at risk from this arsenic effect. And you might think about not feeding rice to children even under the age of 5. Then there's rice pasta for those of us that might be gluten-free. Rice cakes, rice crackers, there are all ways that rice sneaks onto our plate without us even thinking about it. So that raises the question as to whether we should avoid all rice from our diet. After all, there are a number of other whole grain options. Of course, Asians are very used to consuming rice on a daily basis, and they might stick with eating that rice, but think about where to source it from. But for the rest of us, perhaps replacing rice with quinoa or couscous is a better way to go. Illusionist Penn Jillette had severe hypertension that triggered him to suddenly change his diet and lifestyle. He used weighing scales with an app that shared his weight with his doctor and a group of select friends. Now, while this video was produced by Withings, the creators of the scales and the app, our purpose in sharing it with you is to show you the power of tracking yourself, garnering social support, and staying in close contact with your doctor. Watch.
As my weight fell off, and I lost for over 3 months, I lost 0.9 pounds a day, which is extremely rapid weight loss. Extremely rapid weight loss. And it is dangerous weight loss. This is not playing with kids stuff. So losing that amount of weight, the blood pressure medications that were keeping me alive turn into poison. They turn into poison when you don't need them. And my blood pressure was coming down so quickly that the Withings blood pressure cuff would get the reading, it would go to my doctor, and he would tell me right away, we got to cut back on this med, and then this med, and then this med. So my blood pressure came down safely and sanely for the whole time I was losing weight. Now, of course, the credit for that comes from the diet and comes from my doctor. My doctor was supervising all of this. But for my doctor to get the information he needed to give me the advice that made me as healthy as I am now, which I'm going to tell you, pretty healthy. I mean, for me, pretty healthy. Not Olympic athlete, but pretty healthy. My blood work is perfect. For my doctor to get the information that he needed to make wise choices on my meds, he needed to know my blood pressure every day. there's no magic. It's really important for magicians to say all the time, there is no magic. There's nothing that you can buy that will make you healthy. There's nothing. You have to do it with information and work and decision making. All of that stuff, it's all down to you. But information is always good. If you're trying to lose weight, if you're trying to fix hypertension, knowing what your weight is and knowing what your blood pressure is at all times is really important. It's really important that I make part of my day stepping on a scale and doing my blood pressure.
And really important to involve a physician such as Dr. Brenda Ray, our guest on today's show. We caught up with her at the American College of Lifestyle Medicine meeting in Tucson, Arizona, where she was a guest speaker and a trainer. As a family medicine physician and dietitian, Dr. Ray sees a wide range of people and problems, all with a different starting point. I asked her how she knows where to begin with each client.
I just think, how can I align with my patients? How can I understand their story and what has brought them to the place where they are, where we get to spend some time together? So there's lots of background. I don't start with their childhood, but I do want to get to know them. And so when they come to see me in the clinic, we actually have several forms that we let them fill out, which helps me understand where they are in their space. And so we ask a few physical activity questions, nutrition questions, sort of stress, weight, sleep. So some of the basic lifestyle questions we ask them to kind of on a scale to tell us where they are. And then on top of it, I ask them, you know, why are you here? What do you want to accomplish? And what motivates you? And so that really helps me understand what they're aiming for. A lot of people come in saying they want to lose weight. But really, when you start to look at it, yeah, weight is sort of a byproduct of all their health behaviors. And so we actually start looking at, well, what are the health behaviors that we need to look at that will result in weight loss? And we remove weight loss as being the primary goal so that we can look at it from a different perspective. And so it just really helps me kind of get to know the patient from that perspective.
Now, there are aspects of our lifestyle or our kind of our framework that change how well we look after ourselves, you know, that self-care that we actually don't think about. Mm-hmm. One of the key things they've found is adverse child events, isn't it?
Yes.
Just explain mm-hmm. that for mm-hmm. our viewers.
So we always do a little bit of a screen, and the two questions I always ask my patients are, you know, did you grow up in a home with someone who was alcoholic? And did you grow up with having any kind of physical, verbal, or sexual abuse? If you get a positive to any one of those, then we consider that to be a positive adverse childhood event screen. And then that tells me that there is a lot more that's going on deeper that we probably need to talk about and address, because when people have experienced those types of things growing up, it really limits their self-perception of what they think they can allow themselves to do. They feel like I'm not allowed to, or I don't have permission to take care of myself, or I'm not good enough to take care of myself. There's a lot of issues underlying there. And what's wonderful is in my clinic, we have actually behavioral health specialists that work right along with us. So if I identify that, I can actually walk out of the room, ask my medical assistant to call the behavioral health specialist, and they can come right then and there, and I can do a warm handoff and say, hey, you know, this is so-and-so, this is their story, let's connect you guys and start working on some of those issues as well, so that they feel like they have a team of support.
That's amazing, because a lot of people don't realize the impact of those events. They grew up with it. That was how life was, and they don't realize that there's some deep impact mm-hmm. there that they've just mm-hmm. covered up. I mean, you have to survive, really. Mm-hmm. So yeah, that's amazing that you've got this
clinic.
It's
wonderful.
I feel so
blessed to be in the environment that I am.
Right. Mm-hmm. Now, one of the things I think you talk about is spirituality. Why is that important?
Yeah, so when I think about spirituality, I think, what wakes you up in the morning? What keeps you going? What's your purpose and your meaning in life? And so some people, by talking with them and getting their story, I already know they're spiritual or they're Christian, and it just automatically comes out. And then that opens up the door where we can pray together, we can talk about it, we can talk about all their supports and their connections and, you know, what makes them tick. But there are other patients where it doesn't really come up. And I feel that if a person is actually going to be able to look at their whole environment and their lifestyle and want to actually make behavior changes, that's really important for us to understand their purpose and meaning from a spiritual perspective. And so then I actually ask them. And a lot of times I'll ask like an open-ended question. Tell me a little bit about what brings you purpose or meaning in life. And then at that point, a lot of times the spirituality, if it hasn't come out yet, will come out. And for some people, it's religious. For some people, it's not. For some people, it's connecting with the earth, the nature. Some people, it's connecting just with their family. And for them, that's spirituality. And that's really important, that connectedness. So helping me understand where a patient is coming from helps me know how to come to them and to meet them and align with them and help them bolster and make that stronger as they think about making a change.
Because it's going to undergird everything. Yeah. It's kind of foundational,
right,
isn't it?
Right. So a lot of times we live with, we say certain things are important and that we value them, but our behaviors don't match what we say are our values and our purpose. And so I really look to help people understand the discrepancy between those two and how the patient can decide how to align themselves and what kind of goals they want to set to decrease that discrepancy.
Right. Now, it sounds like spirituality is actually a little bit different to religiosity. Would that be right?
Yeah. So there's some people that consider themselves spiritual, but they don't belong to any faith organization or go to church regularly and whatnot. Although we do know that there's a lot of data that shows belonging to a church organization or a church community, for the most part, can be very beneficial. But I have actually run into some patients that have had some negative religiosity experiences. And so it's really important for me to not have my biases and my perspectives brought to the table, but to understand and ask the questions so that I know where my patient's coming from. And so the religiosity, oftentimes, if I can see that they're involved in a church-based community, then I am able to help build on that as a source of support for them. But if they've had negative experiences and damage from that perspective, then we have to come at it a little bit differently for them to find their purpose and meaning.
Right. And then how important is emotional or behavioral health in the process of physically self-caring?
Mm-hmm. It's so important. And so those are one of the things. I think if as a physician, if I can connect with my patient on an emotional level, and they can understand that we are both human, and we both have our own struggles, and we're here to help and support each other and to create a team where they don't feel like I'm the one that has all the answers and I need to tell them what to do and tell them what they have to fix and tell them what they have to change from more of a patriarchal perspective. If I can reach them and touch them emotionally and connect with them on that level and for them to know that we are a team, then to me, being in that space, I think really opens up trust and that relationship so that then they can really truly look at themselves, because people don't want to look at themselves if they're not in a place of space. So if they know that they're in a place that's safe and that it's okay to be able to look at those things that are difficult and to talk about them, then you can start to work on them. But if you just push them away like it doesn't exist and it's not a problem, then there's no healing or opportunity for growth there.
And here's how one famous person fostered opportunities for growth. The American painter John Sargent once painted a panel of roses that he considered his best work. They were beautiful and he was often offered a lot of money for it, but he refused to sell. Whenever he became discouraged and doubted his ability as an artist, he would look at that panel of roses and tell himself, "I painted that." Then his confidence and courage would return. Our journey in life is the same. Satan longs to remind us that we're not what we should be, and he wants us to focus on our deficiencies. There's an encouraging promise in Philippians 1:6. It says that God began the good work in you and he will keep right on helping you grow in his grace until his work in you is finished in that day when Jesus Christ returns. So when you feel like you're never going to make it, just realize that Jesus Christ has not yet returned. Remember that God will keep his word. Reminisce on what he's already accomplished in you and through you. Just keep hanging on to him. We're back and it's time to turn your space into a gym. Sean's here. Hi, Sean.
Hi, how are you?
Good. What do we got?
All right, so we got some dumbbells. I mean, you can use any size dumbbells, but today we have a 5-pound dumbbell and a 10-pound dumbbell. Getting something that will challenge the muscle is a great way to burn some calories. So About 10 pounds is a good way to challenge the muscles and burn some additional calories, okay? So we're going to start with a quick warm-up, which is great. Remember, dynamic exercise is a great way to warm the muscles prepared for exercise, okay? So let's go here. Stay in place. What you can do is take your timer for about 30 seconds. Or you can do it for reps, you know, 30 reps. Each time your foot goes down, we'll consider it a rep. Let's do
each
five
foot?
More seconds. Yep.
Or just the one
yep,
side.
Yep, like one, two, three, four, and five. You can do that for about 30 seconds. The heart rate will go up. You start to build a little sweat, and that's what you need in order to prepare the body for movement. All right, let's grab our dumbbells. I'm going to show you what they call, like, around-the-globe lunges, okay? We're going to lunge forward, lunge to the side, and lunge to the back. All right, so it looks like this. One. One. And one. Okay, every time you go around, consider that one. You give it a try, go ahead.
All right.
One. To the side, one. Back, and one. Now go forward. Two. Two, make sure you're breathing. And two. Now the beauty of that is that you're getting to work multiple planes of the muscle, all right? So you're working the forward lunge, the side lunge, and the back lunge, which works a little bit more balanced, okay? So you can do that for about five on each side, right? And then go to the other side, because if you do one side, you're gonna be lopsided, okay?
And the other side's gonna get awful.
Yeah, the other side, you're gonna walk in circles or so, okay?
Okay.
So the beauty of that too is that you burn a lot of calories because you have your dumbbells.
Right.
Okay, so you have an opportunity to burn lots and lots of calories. So challenge yourself. Choose a weight that's going to be challenging for you.
Yeah, because you're working your core and your leg muscles.
Absolutely.
Big muscles. So
big muscles.
Gonna
on that side lunge, remember to keep that leg straight. Okay?
Uh-huh.
Try that side lunge again. Forward. Side lunge, keep it straight. Yes, that's it. If you want to do it right, do it right from the beginning.
Hey.
From the beginning. All right? Good.
Yep.
All right, so number two, what we're going to do is work our shoulders. All right? Hands here, we're gonna go up. I want you to do this for about 10 to 15 reps. Get a good burn, and you don't need to go any higher than this, all right? Make sure you're breathing. Your heart rate should be going down at this point, okay? Give me one more. Remember, 10 to 15 reps, all right? Now let's go back to your legs. So we worked the quads, we worked the shoulders, and now we're gonna go right back to our hamstrings now. So feet shoulder width apart, go all the way down, get a nice stretch, and come up. There you go, and come up. Now how can you make this a little bit more challenging? As you come up, you can add a bicep curl. All right, another way to burn calories, all right, one more. All the way down, and come up, all right? You can do those three exercises for about maybe 2 to 3 rounds. Trust me, you'll get a good calorie burn, you get a good sweat, and the most important part is you have fun doing it.
Absolutely.
Now, the most important part after you finish the big workout is cool down, okay?
Yep.
So I advise you to take your right arm, let's stretch out the delts. 3, 2, 1, switch sides. And here's another one, feet together, reach all the way down, stretch out those legs. You got a good combination of exercises, stretching out your upper body, stretching out your lower body, come up nice and slow, and you are done.
Great, thanks, Sean.
You're welcome.
If you are eating to lose weight, then nuts like pistachios or almonds might be off your menu. But should they be? Two clinical trials compared the effectiveness of two different weight loss plans. Both diets were low fat, but one added nuts to the plan. Those following the nut diets stuck to their eating plan better and for longer, and in the end lost more weight. Adding nuts to a low-fat diet can improve your weight loss and is another ageless advantage.
And now for your questions. Here's our first question. Is soy and tofu healthy for you? Are there certain kinds of soy that are bad for you, like fermented or unfermented? Or soy and tofu, I think, are really healthy for you. There's a possible link, though, between high consumption of fermented soy and stomach cancer. And we see that more in Asia, where a lot of soy is eaten. Our next question, what would be a good breakfast for someone who doesn't have a gallbladder? Well, usually within 1 to 2 months of having your gallbladder out, you should be able to tolerate all the same foods as everyone else does. But you know, one of the reasons that you lost your gallbladder is probably as a consequence of eating a high-fat diet. So this is a really good time to switch to a low-fat diet. You know, to leave the deep-fried foods off the menu, limit your use of cheese, change to low-fat dairy, eliminate oil from your cooking, and replace salad dressings with a squeeze of lemon juice, a little salt, and a sprinkle of nuts. Our last question. My doctor wants me to take 3,000 milligrams of omega-3 fats every day. Does flaxseed oil provide me enough omega-3? And do I need omega-6 too? Well, most vegetable oils are loaded with omega-6, so people really get more than enough of that. Just 2 tablespoons of ground flaxseed contain 3,200 milligrams of omega-3 fats. So you can just sprinkle that on your breakfast or add it to a smoothie. I suggest you avoid the oil because it's high in calories, it's highly processed, it goes rancid quickly, so you'd have to keep it in the freezer, and it's costly. Remember, if you have a question, send it to us by Facebook, text, email, or phone. Like us on Facebook to become part of the Go Healthy for Good community. Now let's see what's in the store. Watercress is one of the oldest known leaf vegetables consumed by man. It's a cousin to mustard and radish. You can tell because they all have that peppery, tangy flavour that not everyone enjoys. But a small amount in a salad can give it a really interesting flavour. As its name suggests, it grows in water. And if left to grow, it can grow up to 4 feet. 1 cup of chopped cress contains just 4 calories, of which half are protein. Like almost all the green leafy vegetables, it's got plenty of vitamin K and omega-3 fats. It also contains the minerals iron, calcium, and iodine. A study of breast cancer patients has shown it has the ability to suppress the growth of solid tumours. So you might want to add it to your anti-cancer juicing regime. Bon appetit. Today's expert guest is Dr. Brenda Ray, family medicine physician at Loma Linda University Health. Here she describes a lifestyle medicine consultation.
I think the most important thing I asked them at the very beginning is, what brought you here? What are you hoping to accomplish? And most often it ends up being some big goal that is, you know, I just want to be happier, I just want to be able to play with my kids, or I want to be a good mom, or I want to be present for my family, you know, some of those kinds of things. Occasionally you'll get something a little bit more specific, like I want to lose weight or things like that. But so I think for me to just get that perspective of what brought you here. And occasionally you get, well, my wife told me to be here, or my husband said I had to be here. That's, you know, so sometimes you're working with a whole different ballgame when you get those kinds of responses, which I love too. It's a fun challenge for me.
Now, how do people find, what is your clinic called, and how do they find you?
Oh, okay, yeah. So I work at Loma Linda University Health, and I work in the primary care department, family medicine specifically, and we work as consultants. And so they can just call the family medicine department at Loma Linda and ask for a lifestyle medicine visit, and they get a 40-minute first visit and then return visits for 20 minutes however and whenever they'd like them. We kind of set up a schedule, and it's a new service. We just started in February.
Wow.
And so it's covered by insurance.
Someone who recognizes that something needs to change in their lives, but they don't quite know how to get there. They can actually come and see you.
Yes, and we're so excited about it. We're trialing it, and we're looking at all the data and to see if this is something that's financially viable. And so far, it's been really positive and great, and we've expanded tremendously because of the demand. Mm-hmm. So, and we've marketed ourselves to the Loma Linda physicians, all the different teams, so they're referring into us as well. Yeah.
Right, so you're getting referrals then. Yeah. So give us an example of how you walk through this process with the average patient. Let's say it's weight loss, because that's something that's pretty broad.
Yeah, absolutely. So when I have someone that comes in that wants to work with weight loss, I really try to help them shift their perspective from weight loss to looking at actual behaviors, because if we can look at the behaviors, for instance, if they're totally sedentary and sit all day, or if they're eating a lot of junk food, or if they're just not getting any sleep, only sleeping 3-4 hours a day, what I do is I try to sit and figure out with them. I see, based on the form, all the potential areas that are problematic that would make it difficult for them to lose weight. But I work with them and I say, you know, which of these, of all these things that we've talked about, I'm concerned about some of these, but which of these would you like to address, or which of these would you like to work on first? And so a lot of times people will say they come in kind of wanting a very prescriptive nutrition program. And so at that point then they say, just tell me what to eat or tell me how many calories I need, or they're very prescriptive. And so I really try to help shift the perspective from, you know, whatever changes we make, this is not a diet, this is not a short-term fix. You know, I'm not going to tell you to, you know, restrict major anything. We need to think about the types of foods, making healthy choices, and I can help you with that. And then I want you to be able to problem solve and figure that out for yourself with my guidance, and not have me give you like this prescriptive thing that you feel like you have to fit into. And so this is whole spectrum of which where a patient starts and what changes they like to make. And I try to, I promote whole food plant-based nutrition. But everybody's going to start at a different place and end at a different place and be at a comfort level at a different place. And I'm totally fine with that. But I always say, well, my main goal is to just get you to eat more plants.
Right.
And so that's a real simple message.
Right. So you're taking the focus off the numbers
correct.
On the scale, the number of calories,
correct.
Which actually makes life really hard. And yes. you're giving them a much easier process to reach their goals.
And I want them to think about taking control for themselves of what's going to work for them, and that it doesn't have to be look like anybody else's plan.
So what might a typical, they would pick one area that they just want to start working on?
It depends on the person.
Yes?
Yeah, so most people like to set, so what I do is I actually say, okay, well these are all the areas where there's potential, where we can grow. Which of these areas would you like to set goals in? And so if they say, well, I'd like to set some nutrition goals, then I would say, okay, tell me what would that look like? What would you envision you'd like to change about your nutrition that would make you healthier? And oftentimes, like even if I were to ask you right now, if there was one thing you wanted to change about your nutrition that would make you healthier and set a goal around it, you probably have something that immediately pops into your head, right?
Right.
So I just do that with my patients. I say, well, what would you like to change? What would that look like for you? And they come up with it, like 99% of the time. And most of the time, it's a great goal, and I don't have to fix it. I may make it more objective, measurable, but I don't have to tell them, no, that's a bad goal.
Right, and then you might give them tools.
Correct, of how to accomplish it.
How to do
that's
it,
right.
because they've been stuck in a rut over
right.
that particular.
Right. And they'll say, yeah. sleep, you know, I noticed that there's some issues with it. Is that something you'd like to address now? Or, you know, we want to leave that for later. Oh, how about physical activity? I see that you're sitting all day. There's different things we could do from that perspective. Is that something you'd like to think about making any changes now, or do you want to save that for later? Right. So some people will say, oh, I want to do this, this, and this. And I'm very open, because if people are, I don't say, oh, no, that's too many goals. I say, well, you know what? We can set these goals if you're interested in doing these. Some would say this might be too much, but let's try it. And I said, we can learn just as much about our failures as we can our successes. And so let's go with it. And when you come back next time, I just want to know how it went. And if it was difficult for some of them and other ones were easy, then we can just keep modifying and adjusting. Right? So some people might set 4 or 5 goals, and some people might just set 1. And I'm okay with that as long as they're engaged and they're making up their own goals and they're deciding what they want to do.
Stand by for a story from Dr. Ray straight ahead. You don't want to miss it, so stick around. Gillette lost over 100 pounds after a blood pressure scare by changing his diet and his lifestyle. Now he's out to help his friends. See how.
Here's a friend of mine who was really, really wicked, wicked sick. And I bought him a Withings scale, and I bought him a blood pressure cuff. And I just got this text. We're shooting this in the afternoon. This is an hour ago I got this text from my buddy Andy. It's from Withings. Says, congratulations, you've hit a new low. And he is at 193.2 pounds. That's from his Withings scale sent to me directly. 193.2 pounds. That's 40 pounds that he's lost. Withings tells him that right there. You've hit a low weight, and he has made it to 40 pounds. Phew. And then underneath it, I've texted him back. And I texted this while we were shooting something else for Withings. What I've texted back is 3 letters. Y-A-Y. Yay. Okay? That's a guy across the country doing his Broadway show in New York. This is my buddy, a comedy writer, movie writer, big movie guy in L.A. Stepping on his scale and sending me this. And I write back, yay. Okay? Now, No device can give you that. No device can give you people that love you and support you and want to help you lose weight. You know, you're going to need that. And no device can give you a doctor or replace a doctor. But what that scale gave him was a connection with his buddy 3,000 miles away in the middle of a shoot who can bother to text EA. And I'll tell you, losing 40 pounds, stepping on a withing scale, having that sent to your buddy in New York, and having him send back yay, that's going to get him his next 20 that he needs to lose. And he's going to be really, really healthy. And all of that is him. And then a little part of joins in with his doctor. And then a tiny part joins in me and his friends. It's all him.
Penn did it. Andy's doing it, and with a little help from your doctor and your friends, you can do it too. Here's Dr. Ray with the story of someone else who did it.
One of my first patients when we opened up this clinic was a young woman who works at our institution, and she's in the healthcare profession, and she has shift work, and she came to me for weight loss. She wanted to lose weight. She'd been on tons of different diets, different, you know, restriction this, restriction that, and she's thinking, do I need to do weight loss pills? I don't know. I'm frustrated. And then she had joint pain, and she'd just been diagnosed with gout, and she'd just come from a primary care doctor, and was starting to have pre-hypertension, and she had pre-diabetes, but her main goal was she wanted to lose weight. I mean, she didn't mention all those things. She just wanted to lose weight. And so just talking about the ability to kind of shift perspective.
And I'm sure in her thinking as a health professional, if I lose the weight, then
everything
my blood pressure
else,
and everything
right.
else will come in
this
line.
This is correct.
Right.
This is correct.
Yes.
Which I think in many cases, that is very good and very appropriate. But one of the reasons why I wanted to share this case is because we actually, over time, with her shifting things, she lost very little, a very gradual weight. But everything else normalized. So it's very powerful. And the reason why I wanted to bring this story is that she decided she had a lot of allergies and different things like that. And I thought she might have some food intolerances. So we actually decided to go completely whole food, plant-based, and even consider what to do with gluten, because some people are sensitive to gluten, some people aren't. And so I gave her the choice. You can try off of it or not, and monitor your symptoms. Right? And so she's like, okay, I'm going to do this.
Wow.
And she just went hardcore. And
that's
some of the
very
issues,
brave. That's a
it
lot
was
of
so
change,
brave.
Isn't it?
But yeah. she was at that point. I think you think about that tipping point for her. She had reached that tipping point where she tried so many things and she was so frustrated. And now she'd gotten this bad news about these additional things that were happening in her mind. Like, if I could just lose weight, everything would be better. Right? And so she just needed someone to sit with her and say, you can do this. And I'm here, and I'm a part of your team, and I will support you. And these are options for you, and a menu of options, and you can pick which ones you want to try, right? So she was a shift worker, so she knew she needed to change her work. So she put in a schedule change to see when she could get a schedule changed, because that was affecting her nutrition patterns. It was affecting her sleep. She had some prior personal conflictual things that had happened in a prior relationship, and she was in a new relationship now that was very supportive, but she still needed to probably address some of those that were still impacting her self-image. So we hooked her up with our behavioral health people, and then the nutrition. And so when we worked at changing her shifts, and we worked with her on her personal conflictual issues, and we changed her nutrition, within 6 to 8 weeks, she came back to me, and all of her blood pressure was normal. Her hemoglobin A1C, which is a measure of blood sugar control, was no longer pre-diabetic. She no longer had any joint pain, and she had a few of autoimmune markers that were a little bit elevated, so she was a little bit worried about maybe some sort of autoimmune arthritis types of, all of that normalized in just 6 to 8 weeks. Right, but her scale had only moved maybe a couple pounds over that period of time. And so the messaging for her was so powerful that, yes, we are interested in ultimate weight loss, but I think it's really important for patients to know even when their weight isn't necessarily changing, they can become more active, they can change the way they think, they can change the way they eat, and they will be really much healthier even if the scale doesn't change. And that over time, slowly the scale will change over time if you are very consistent about it. But what we care more about is a long-term sustainable changes And that eventually that weight will stabilize and normalize for you over time. And so for her, I've tracked her now for about 6 months or so, and she's just got this nice, slow, steady weight loss that's occurring, but she's loving her life. And now her boyfriend is involved and supporting, and you know, she's active, and she's fit that into her schedule. So my story for, I chose her because I just think it's so remarkable. She had so, the food really was a poison to her, the way she was eating. It really was causing so many problems in her body that were exhibiting themselves in multiple ways. But she didn't need a blood pressure medication. She didn't need an autoimmune, you know, modifying medication for her joint pain. She didn't need metformin for her prediabetes. She just needed to change the way she lived.
Mm.
And when you change the way you live, you change the nutrition, your perspective on life, get the appropriate sleep, and have yourself in a nice schedule, then your body's able to function and do well, and it stops sending the messages of help me, help me.
Yes, yes. And it's interesting, the autoimmune piece, that would be that's quite frightening for a health professional to find their autoimmune factors are up. But as you say, if you eliminate the foods that might be triggering those and improve the whole lifestyle, then what might have been like a
slow decline.
Yes. Is now pushed way
reversed.
Back, and it may not ever happen.
Correct.
Or it may be slowed down.
Correct.
For 10, 20
Absolutely.
Years. We don't know.
Mm-hmm. So you're giving the patient a sense of power and control over their own health and their own future.
Right. So she went from victim to victor.
Yes.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. And you think it was did she leave gluten out? I'm curious in the long term.
She actually did.
Yes.
And she actually found that she had a little bit of joint pain when she'd have the gluten, and she actually found that there was a little bit of a threshold so that she could have a little bit every, a little bit maybe once a week or something like that, and she didn't feel it. But if she ate it, maybe a couple times in a row or something like that, then joint pain would kind of come back. And so I think it's a gold standard for me. It's like, if you think that there is a potential food that might be causing problems, well, just eliminate it for a while and then add it back and see, right? And that's sort of the gold standard for yourself. And I don't tell people that they have to eat any particular way, but that let's try, let's experiment, let's see how you feel. Like, I'm here to support you, right? And I say, well, if you want to know how I eat, I can tell you what's worked for me, right? But I also know that there's a lot of evidence that show the more plants you eat, the healthier dietary pattern you in general have, and the lower your risk of chronic disease. So I can give you the evidence, but it's still up to you to make those decisions of what's going to be right and sustainable for you.
It's great if we can find a health provider who's both coach and doctor. They can guide, support, and adjust medications when we're ready to make that lifestyle change. And by tracking our changes, we gain motivation to carry on. The involvement of family or friends can also be a great force for good. And remember that health goals we set ourselves work better if they're aligned with what truly motivates us. With that strong motivation and good support comes success. That's all for me today. Thanks for joining us on Go Healthy for Good. I'll see you next time.